I'll be reading from Luke 16. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with so much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own?
Good morning. We've got as you can tell, a new screen and a new projector. I hope that is clearer. Hope especially the folks on this side can see better. Is that better? Wonderful. Wonderful. A new PA system. So hopefully I'll be louder and clearer. You can hope that I'll be better, but I don't think the PA system, that one was quite a bit more expensive than we could afford. So we got some new devices for those of you who might be hearing impaired that will not interfere with your hearing aids if you have them. So we've got several of those if you want to try those. And Melvin is using one of them. He is not communicating with Mars. He is listening to the lesson. But they have a little different look, but hopefully those will work well so everybody will be able to hear and see. And we need to remember 2 weeks from today is our Friends and Family Day. And so I hope you're making plans to be here on that morning. We will have our Sunday school class. And Rob, I think we'll probably have Sunday school in here 2 weeks because we'll be preparing in the fellowship hall for our fellowship meal. And I know there'll probably be some decorating going on with that. So we'll have our class in here. Tony Holt will be teaching our class and preaching that day. Tony is certainly familiar to many of us. Tony is the minister of family life at North Boulevard. When Tony and I first met, he was the preacher at Christiana. Then he was at Kingwood Heights at the time for a number of years. And so Tony will be with us on that Sunday. So we'll have our 9 o'clock, our 9:15 class, our 10 o'clock assembly. Then we'll have a fellowship meal following that. If you'll bring some food for that. If you can't bring that, just come and be with us anyway. And then we won't have an evening service on that Sunday. But that's 2 weeks. Come, invite your friends, your neighbors, your family to come and be with us. We'll have a good day of fellowship and study of God's Word together. So look forward to that. Next Sunday is the fifth Sunday, and Tyler Boyd will be speaking next Sunday morning, and then we'll have a singing next Sunday night here. We'll have singing night, so hope that you'll come and be a part of that next week as well. I want to talk to you about this story, this parable of Jesus, because it is a difficult parable as we first read it. So we'll read through it and talk for a moment about the difficulty in it a little bit, at least certainly from our standard, but I think we can understand it. But I really want us to focus for just a moment on the point that Jesus is making, because it is an important one, and it's one that sometimes we separate from our lives, the way that we conduct ourselves and conduct our business and live our lives. And this parable is very specifically saying that the way we conduct our lives, the way we conduct our business, the way we handle our material goods specifically, has spiritual implications. And that the way we handle and the way we are stewards of what we are given certainly is a reflection on our core being, our core value, and really our acceptance of the will and the attitude and the attributes of God. When we talk to folks who might be having marital difficulty or in premarital counseling, we will talk a lot about money. Not necessarily because money itself is all that important, although all of us understand its importance, because it is the way we record value, and it's a requirement. It's just like eating is a requirement. And so managing how we eat is one of those things we can't say, well, I'm just not going to eat, so it won't be a problem. You know, you've got to eat, so you got to figure out how to manage that. It's one of the same concepts. It's not like we can say, well, I'm not going to deal with money are things of value because I just have a problem with it. I'm not good with it. It's a temptation. I'm just not going to do it. It's just a requirement for all of us, not only as individuals, but as a church. Because we got all this new system, which I think is wonderful. But we had to pay for it. And rightly so. And the lights that are on, we pay for the electricity and for the water and for the insurance and all of those things. It's just a requirement of living. Okay? So how we do that, though, is a reflection of who we are. Because just like in marriage, it has importance. And this is the main importance of money. In our marriages and in our spiritual lives. Because money is the way where we allocate our money and how we use our money is really how we are voting our priorities. It is a reflection of what is important to us. And that's why it has such great value, because what we do with our money, with our material gifts, is a reflection really of who we are, of what's important to us, of what's a priority for us. As I've shared with you before, if you really truly want to know what's important to you, I'm not talking about what's what you talk about and what you say is important to you, but if you look where you spend your time and spend your money, we'll give you a pretty good idea of what's really important to you. What's really important to you. And that's true, and I think that's why this parable is of such great importance. Let's read this together. Jesus told his disciples, "There was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be a manager any longer.'" Now, guy gets word from other servants, from folks he does business with, whatever, that this man who's managing his business, and this guy obviously has some authority, that he is able to make decisions, to make investments, to collect, to do, you know, he is a manager with authority, that you're not doing a good job. So I'm going to remove you from this position. And so I need you to do a closeout accounting. I need to see the books. I need you to turn over your records. This is a business transaction. I'm going to let you go. So give me all of the records. That's what one would expect, right? That is, for those of us who are elected officials, you know, we everything we do is regulated, but it's kind of painted with some fairly broad strokes. But one of the requirements is that when we leave office, that we turn over a proper accounting of the office. And you'll be surprised how many times when positions are elected, that when somebody gets beaten or they retire and their hand-selected person doesn't win, that records disappear. Or one individual, I believe it was the court clerk, all their files were in a room, and they had just taken and dumped all the boxes in the middle of the floor. I can't imagine adults acting that way. But, you know, you hear those stories. Not been involved in that personally, thankful for that. But anyway, a proper accounting is something that's required. That's what's going on here. This person, I'm letting you go because my understanding is you're not doing a good job. So bring the books, bring your records in, give an accounting, and I'm going to let you go. That was in the days before computers when we could all have access to the records. The manager said to himself, "What shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm too proud to beg." Here's where he is, because the chances of him getting another management position, probably they're not all that readily available. Plus, he's got a little bit of a blackball, right? You know, always they ask this question, "Why did you leave your last position?" "Because I was stealing," or "I didn't do a good job. I mismanaged." Penny's shaking her head. That's never what they say, right? But anyway, the word's going to get out. It's interesting. I'm not strong enough to dig. You know, I can't do manual labor and I don't want to beg. So what's left? I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. And this is about this man being shrewd. I mean, this man being saying, now what am I going to do? How am I going to survive this mid-career crisis? So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, how much do you owe my master? 800 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, take your bill, set down quickly, and make it 400. Then he asked the second, and how much do you owe? 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told him, take your bill and make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he acted shrewdly. Therein lies the difficulty in this story, right? Jesus tells the story that he commends this gentleman who is dishonest. But what's the reason is he had been shrewd in the way he had done business. Now there's speculation. Did he do anything illegal? Did he steal from the master? Was this perhaps interest that was owed to the individual? Or was this his commission? Did he get paid on commission? And so he's wiping out his commission to find favor, feeling like he gets greater value. I think the most likely of this man really had authority as a manager. When I say that, there are different levels of management, right? Sometimes folks manage, which means they kind of oversee, but they report everything to a higher office. And then there are folks who really have an operation to which they are in charge, and they make fairly large decisions. I think this guy probably at least had the authority to change or to negotiate on this debt, and so he does. Now, does he do it to the best interest of his employer? No. What's he doing? It's clear. Jesus tells us what he's doing. So when he's out on his ear, he's got somewhere soft to land. That these folks will remember that he did them a favor and welcoming him to their home where he can have somewhere to stay and something to eat. Now, that's what he's doing. But the point of this is, and I don't want us to lose the point, that this man with material things acted shrewdly. Although he had been dishonest, he had acted shrewdly. But why did he lose his job? Because he'd been dishonest with the things, right? He could not be trusted. He could not be trusted. And so he loses his job. The people of the world, Jesus says, are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. And Jesus is not saying that we should learn from the people of the darkness and be dishonest. That's not the point. So if you're making that note that says, whew, now, I wanted to make that deal and I couldn't figure out a way, but I'm going to be shrewd like that. That's not what Jesus is saying. He's saying that's just a fact. That's just a fact. But let's look at what then the point Jesus makes. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself. Now, let's read all of this. Because in light of this story, what do you think he's saying? Buy influence with the dollars you've got, right? That's not what he's saying. So that when it is gone, you will be welcome into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. Now, Jesus is not in this point saying, let's use earthly wealth to manipulate folks and to make friends because the wealth will be gone. When is earthly wealth going to be gone? Now, it could be today or tomorrow, right? And you can buy physical gold, but if everything collapses, I'm telling you, it isn't going to be much good. I hope that doesn't happen, but it could. It could happen to us, if you will, on a global scale. Or Ralph, we were talking earlier, it could happen. A man can go broke individually, right? It can happen. Where you lose it, it might be sickness. It might be a lawsuit. It might be a bad business deal. I don't know what it is. But we could lose it. We could just lose our jobs on which we are dependent. Our greatest source of wealth for most of us is what? Our income. We could lose it based on all kinds of things. But I think the point Jesus is really making is, are we going to be able to take earthly wealth with us? No. It's going to be gone. It's going to be gone. Josh, was it you who sent me the picture? It says, oh, was it Rob? Well, Josh sends me lots of pictures, very few of which I talk about from the pulpit. But it was one of those things, you can never use that phrase again. And what it was a U-Haul truck behind a hearse. And that was the, you know, we've all said, you've never seen a U-Haul following a hearse. Well, that was the picture. And it sounded like one of Josh's, but maybe it wasn't. But what's the point of that? That you're not going to take these physical things with you. And the Scripture will go so far as to remind us, to tell us of this truth. And this truth is that those things have no value outside this world. And they're actually going to all be burned up. It's going to actually all be destroyed. All the things that we've built, not only individually, but societally, they'll all be gone. The Great Wall of China will be gone. It has lasted centuries, but it will be gone. Physical gold will be gone. Bank accounts will be gone. Houses will be gone. Lands will be destroyed. It will all be gone. All right? It's not going to have value. It will be gone. So, what can we do with it besides provide for ourselves while we are on this earth? Jesus says to use earthly wealth, the things we are given, and I'm paraphrasing, but I believe the meaning of this parable is this, to be about God's business. So that when those things are gone and we are moving to the place that God has prepared for us, that we have a home there because the way we steward the blessings God has given us here will be a reflection on who we are and how we will be when we move to a different phase of eternity. When we go to be with God. If we are dishonest and unfaithful now, why would you expect that to change? Right? That's what Jesus is saying. That the test is what we do with our goods now are reflected who we are. It's the parable of the talents. Remember that? The man who has five, the man who has two, and the man who has one. The man who doubled the five and the two both got more. He who is faithful with a few things will be given many. And the one who buried it had the very one he had taken away from him. Jesus is not saying that we should all become investors. That we should all get finance degrees and be day traders or be Wall Street investors. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is this, and I'm going to add time to this, because for many of us, time is of as great of importance as money. That what we do with our time, our money, our abilities in this life is a reflection of who we are, what our priorities are, and what our nature is, and it will be then a reflection on how we live. And those who do that to serve God and to serve others, and who are honest and faithful, God knows we'll be honest and faithful and we'll be given responsibility for many things. And for those of us who are slothful and wasteful and greedy and dishonest, that God's not going to trust us with eternal wealth. Have you thought about that? Have you thought about how I'm living my life and using what I have as a reflection that will follow me through all of eternity? We are forgiving pretty much for folks pretty well. But if you get the reputation for not being dishonest, it's hard to shake it, isn't it? It's hard to shake it. If you're known for cheating on a deal, here's where I am. I don't want to trade with you. I don't want to deal with you. I don't care how good and straight the deal looks, I'm always going to figure what? You're going to get me somehow, somewhere. People have that reputation. I don't want to deal with them. And right to the opposite, other folks have the reputation and the track record of doing the right thing and doing what they say. And it may be, now they're good business people. In other words, they're going to make some money because that's what business people do. But they will deliver what they say, the way they say, in an honest way. That's their reputation. And people flock to them. People flock to them because they know they're going to do what they say they're going to do. For many of us, we're willing to pay for that if we just get what we pay for. Right? I just want somebody I can trust. God's saying, if that's the way we live, it is a reflection. If we're faithful over what we have been given, we're trying out the PA system this morning. We're just going to see how good the PA system is today. My throat's already sore. I don't know if it's that good. Maybe I'm straining. But it is a reflection on how we're going to be, how we live. And God is watching us. And not only whether we're wasteful or whether we're good, but here's the question. Are we using these things, our abilities, our money, our talents, our time, to be about God's business? We might be honest, but selfish, self-centered. Is that what God wants us to be? He certainly doesn't want us to be giving and dishonest, but He wants us to be honest and giving. Because these things last such a short time. They're very trivial. I know they seem important to us, but especially in God's eye, they're trivial. So the test is, what will we do with these trivial things are going to be a reflection of what we would do when God makes us responsible for greater things. We're going to have, obviously, in the Scriptures, there's a responsibility for us in heaven, that we'll have responsibilities. God's watching us. If we're not using what He gives us here to love Him and to love others, to be about His business, God says, then why do I think when I give them responsibility in heaven, they're going to use it to the betterment of others? I know we all like the thought that when we get to heaven, God just snaps His finger and all of our bad things just go away. And I know it's going to be different. We're going to be changed. But obviously, who we are, and I like to continue to make this point, who we are is who we are. Because who's going to be saved or lost? Us. Us. Not some nebulous soul over which we have no knowledge or no connection, no memory. It's us. It is us. It's me and you. Me and you are going to be lost or me and you are going to be saved. And who we are is who we are. And God is saying, if you've not been faithful and loving and caring and honest and giving in this life, that's who you are, that's who you're going to be, and I'm not going to give you responsibility or blessings in heaven because you haven't used the blessings that you've been given on earth. So now maybe this parable has greater difficulty than you thought it had at first when you had some difficulty over this guy doing things that we would find to be immoral and deceitful and being praised for it and finding that the real difficulty is that the way I live, the way I spend my time and my money and my resources is a reflection on who I am and my relationship with God and my integrity and my priority. And so we need to look at those things because many of us would say, I don't steal, I don't commit adultery, I've never murdered, and go down the list. But you might look and say, I'm one selfish rascal. Or, I'm not used, God has blessed me immensely, and we might look and say, what good have I done with that? What good for God have I done? Maybe say, I've never had a lot of money, but I sure have some ability, I can do this, I can do that, I've had some time. And look, what have I done for God? Because the teaching of this parable is God's looking. God's looking. And He's going to reward us based on what we've done with the little things that we have. Because he who is faithful with a few things will be given many. Jesus said, he who proves himself to be faithful or unfaithful with a few things will be faithful or unfaithful with many things. But we don't get those opportunities if we're not faithful with them. How we live, how we conduct our business, live our lives, what are our priorities here are important, and they're important to God. And God calls us to live in a way that honors Him and serves others. Because we need to be living here just like we're going to live in heaven. I'm going to repeat that. We need to be living here just like we're going to live in heaven, where God's will is done on earth as it is in heaven, right? So what do we need to be about every day? Every day. About God's will, right? We need to be about God's will. Not saying sometime in the future I'm going to be different or it's going to be different. But saying today I'm going to be about God's will. I'm going to use my money, my time, my talent, my ability to be about God's business. To be faithful with what God has given me. Because where does every good and perfect gift come from? God. Why do many of us say blessings at our meal? Give thanks? Because it's an acknowledgement that the very food we eat is a gift from God. Everything we have is God's. How are we using it? We need to be about God's business. If you need to come, won't you do that while we stand and sing?